Welcome, Discovery Rangers. Today we will be exploring Beat the Heat, Animal-Human Cooldown Science.
Imagine it is, like, 105 degrees outside.
Ugh, brutal.
Right. The sun is absolutely roasting everything in sight. And you are wearing a thick, heavy coat of feathers that you cannot take off.
Oh, this sounds like a nightmare.
And you have absolute no access to a swimming pool or a fan or, you know, a cold glass of ice water. What do?
Well, you got to get creative.
You really do, because if you happen to be a vulture, the answer is you spray liquid waste all over your own legs.
Yeah, that is definitely one of the more surprising strategies out there.
Welcome to the bizarre, slightly gross, but totally brilliant survival science of the summer heat.
It's gross to us, sure, but when you're in the wild, you use whatever tools you have available to keep your internal temperature from just boiling over.
And that is exactly what we are getting into today. We are taking a deep dive into this incredibly fun report from May 2026. It was put out by the Discovery Rangers, and it's called Summer Heat Heroes.
It's such a great read, especially for families.
It really is. So our mission for this deep dive is to figure out the actual science of how animals stay cool in extreme conditions. And more importantly, how you and your whole family can use those exact same tricks to beat the heat at home.
Because nature has been troubleshooting these extreme temperatures for millions of years.
Right. They're the pros.
Exactly. The adaptations animals have developed aren't just random quirks. They are highly efficient biological cooling systems.
Mm.
And the physics behind them, well, they apply to us just as much as they apply to an elephant or a vulture.
Okay, let's unpack this. Let's start with the most basic, familiar way that we cool off as humans.
Sweating.
Yes. When we run around in July, we sweat. Or maybe we run through a sprinkler or put a wet towel around our neck. The report actually uses this wet towel analogy to explain the core science here.
It's a really great way to visualize it.
Because if you drape a damp towel over your shoulders on a blazing hot day, you instantly feel this freezing chill. But I want to pause on the mechanics of that, because the towel itself isn't like generating cold air like an air conditioner does.
No, it's not plugging into a wall. What you are feeling is a physical process called evaporative cooling.
Evaporative cooling.
Yeah. To understand it, you have to think about what water actually is at a molecular level. When water is liquid on your skin or in that towel, it needs energy to change its state from a liquid into a gas or water vapor.
And it has to get that energy from somewhere, right?
Precisely. It steals it. Heat is just energy. So those liquid water molecules absorb the heat energy directly from your warm skin.
Oh, wow.
And as they absorb that heat, they get energetic enough to break free and evaporate into the air. And when they leave, they take that heat energy away with them.
So the heat is quite literally being robbed from your body.
Yes, leaving the surface beneath it much, much cooler.
That paints such a clear picture. The water is basically a heat thief escaping into the atmosphere.
That's a great way to put it.
So human sweat works the exact same way. Our bodies push water onto our skin, it evaporates, and it steals our body heat. But if I'm looking at the animal kingdom, most animals don't have sweat glands all over their bodies like we do.
Right, they really don't.
Like if you are an elephant covered in that thick, wrinkly skin, sweating isn't really an option. If humans can sweat to create this evaporation, what on earth do animals with thick fur or giant feathers do when they can't?
Well, elephants have to manually recreate the sweating process. You will often see them using their trunks to spray just massive amounts of water over their backs.
It's like a built-in hose.
Exactly. They're artificially applying liquid to their skin so that evaporative cooling can take place.
But the report mentions they also rely heavily on mud baths. And I gotta say, that always seemed to me like it would just make them hotter.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, a thick layer of mud seems like it would trap the heat in, like wearing a heavy winter blanket.
It's actually the complete opposite. Mud is incredibly effective for two big reasons. First, mud holds moisture much longer than just plain water.
Oh, because water would just drip right off.
Exactly, or evaporate in 5 minutes. So the evaporative cooling process, that slow theft of heat we talked about, lasts for hours as the mud slowly dries out in the baking sun.
That is so smart.
And secondly, it acts as a physical barrier. It's basically a natural sunblock.
Oh, so it's stopping the solar radiation from hitting the skin in the first place.
You got it. It blocks the ultraviolet rays, which prevents sunburn, and it stops the direct heat of the sun from warming the elephant's core temperature.
Okay, so the elephant is using a slow-release evaporative cooling blanket. I can visualize that. But what about animals that don't have trunks to spray themselves, or, you know, mud pits to roll around in? The report mentions this animal called the sitatunga.
Yes. The sitatunga is this fascinating type of water antelope. And in captivity, like at the Smithsonian's National Zoo, they exhibit this really specific behavior where they will actively seek out artificial misting stations.
So they just stand in the mist.
Yeah, they don't want a heavy stream of water. They just stand perfectly still under a superfine mist.
Okay, let me guess why the fine mist is important. If you dump a massive bucket of water on an animal with a coat, the water just rolls off, right? Like water off a duck's back. But the fine mist actually settles into the fur.
You're right on the money. The microscopic water droplets settle onto the coat and down to the skin without just rolling off.
And then they evaporate.
Yes. Because the droplets are so small, they evaporate very quickly.
Yeah.
So it creates this continuous cycle of rapid evaporation, pulling heat away from the sitatunga constantly, but without making them all sopping wet and uncomfortable.
Which brings us back to our vulture from the beginning of the deep dive.
Ah, yes, the vulture.
We mentioned they spray liquid waste, essentially. They pee on their own legs. Now, if we are applying the rules of evaporative cooling to this, the liquid on the legs evaporates and steals heat.
Exactly.
But why the legs? I mean, why not the wings or the chest?
It's all because of what is happening just under the skin. A vulture's wings and body are covered in thick feathers, right? Which act as insulation. But their legs are entirely bare.
Just skin and scales.
Just paper-thin skin. And right beneath that skin is a massive network of blood vessels.
Ah, so it's not just about cooling the skin itself, it's about cooling the blood.
Exactly. Think of the blood vessels in the vulture's bare legs, like those exposed winding coils on the back of an old refrigerator.
Oh, yeah.
When the liquid waste evaporates off the bare skin, it rapidly drops the temperature of the blood flowing through those specific vessels.
And then what? The cold blood goes back inside.
Yes. That newly chilled blood then circulates back up into the vulture's body, bringing down the bird's overall core temperature.
That is wild. So they are literally using their legs as an external coolant system, chilling their own blood before it cycles back to their heart.
It is just incredible biology.
It really is. But this brings up a major logistical problem. Evaporative cooling, whether it's sweat, a misting station, mud, or vulture waste, it requires some kind of liquid.
True.
What if you are an animal living in a blazing hot desert? Like you have zero access to water, you can't use evaporation at all.
That is where animals have to rely strictly on their own body mechanics and their behavior to survive.
The report highlights a super fun home science experiment for families called the ear radiator test to explain this next concept.
I love this experiment.
Me too. It suggests taking 2 cups of warm water, covering one with a dark cloth and the other with a light cloth, placing them in the sun and seeing which gets warmer.
And of course, the dark cloth absorbs more heat.
Right. It makes sense that a dark cloth absorbs heat. But if dark fur absorbs heat like a dark cloth, you'd think desert animals would just evolve to have completely white, heat-reflecting fur. But we know plenty of desert animals don't.
No, they don't.
So how does an animal actually use its body like a machine to pump heat out, since they can't change their fur color in an afternoon?
Right, because fur, even dark fur, also insulates the body against the extreme heat of the external air. But you're right, that internal heat builds up and it needs an escape route. The mechanism they use is called radiative heat loss.
Radiative heat loss.
And now the jackrabbit is the absolute perfect example of this.
The ones with the comically massive ears.
Right. Those ears are not just for hearing predators. If you look closely at a jackrabbit's ear, especially when the sun shines right behind it, you'll see it is packed with a dense branching network of blood vessels.
Kind of similar to the vulture's legs.
Very similar. The skin is incredibly thin, and the surface area of those ears is huge compared to the rest of the rabbit's body.
Let me make sure I'm picturing this right. If the rabbit gets too hot, does its heart pump more blood up into the ears, specifically to vent the heat?
That is exactly what happens. The blood vessels actually dilate, they widen, allowing a rush of hot blood from the rabbit's core to just flood into the ears.
Wow.
And because the skin is so thin and there's so much surface area exposed to the air, the heat from the blood radiates. It literally just escapes outward into the surrounding slightly cooler air.
Just like a car radiator releasing heat from the engine.
Precisely like a radiator. The blood cools down in the ears and then cycles back down into the rabbit's body, acting as a fresh coolant.
And it requires zero water.
Zero water. It's a continuous internal pumping system.
That makes total sense for mammals. But what about birds? We talked about vultures using their bare legs, but if you're a tiny bird covered in thick feathers, you're essentially wearing a down winter coat in the middle of July.
Yeah, not ideal.
And sweating would just mat your feathers down and ruin your ability to fly. So do they just pant like a dog to vent heat?
It looks a bit like panting, but it's a much more specialized mechanism. It's called gular fluttering.
Gular fluttering?
Yeah, swallows and hummingbirds do this. The gular area is essentially their throat. They open their mouths and begin to rapidly vibrate, or flutter, a very thin, moist membrane inside their throat.
Wait, so instead of just breathing heavily like a dog, they are actively vibrating a specific part of their anatomy?
Yes. They vibrate it so fast that it acts like a tiny rapid-fire fan inside their own head.
That's crazy.
This rapid movement pushes air over the moist surfaces of the mouth and throat, allowing massive amounts of trapped body heat to escape out of their open beak.
They are ventilating themselves from the inside out.
Basically, yeah.
These biological machines are amazing, but what happens if you don't have an internal temperature control system at all?
Cold-blooded animals.
Right. The report dives into reptiles and amphibians. If a frog gets stuck in a dry, boiling hot environment, it can't just pump blood to its ears or flutter its throat.
Because amphibians rely entirely on their environment to regulate their body temperature, extreme heat is incredibly dangerous for them. So they have to use behavior. Frogs and toads will actually perform a vanishing act and go into something called estivation.
Estivation. It sounds suspiciously like hibernation.
It is the exact same biological concept, but it's triggered by heat and dryness rather than cold and snow.
Oh, I see.
When the summer temperatures soar and the ponds dry up, a frog will dig a deep burrow in the mud, finding the dampest, coolest spot possible underground.
Oh.
And they basically shut down.
Just totally power off.
They enter a deep summer sleep. Their heart rate drops, their breathing slows to almost nothing, and their metabolism drastically reduces.
So they aren't burning any energy, and they aren't losing any internal moisture.
Right. They simply hit the pause button on life, conserving every drop of water and energy they have until the heavy rains return and the temperature finally drops.
I gotta say, a deep summer sleep underground sounds fairly appealing on a humid August afternoon.
I think we've all been there.
But it isn't just the large animals or amphibians doing this. The report mentions insects have these temperature survival skills too.
Oh, insects are highly collaborative when it comes to heat. Honeybees are a fantastic example. If a beehive gets too hot, the wax can actually melt, which would completely destroy their home and their young.
Oh no.
So they coordinate. A group of worker bees will station themselves at the entrance of the hive and begin wing fanning.
They just stand there and flap their wings. Like, is it to cool themselves off or to cool the hive?
It is entirely for the hive.
What?
By beating their wings incredibly fast at specific angles, they physically push the hot, stagnant air out of the hive while simultaneously drawing cooler, fresh air in from the outside.
Wow.
They become a living, breathing HVAC ventilation system for the entire colony.
That is wild. They build their own air currents. And butterflies do something totally different. The text mentions they use their wings like solar panels.
Yes. Butterflies thermoregulate visually. Mm. If you watch a butterfly in the summer, you'll see them land in a patch of shade and slowly open and close their wings.
I've definitely seen that.
If they need to warm up, they angle their open wings directly at the sun to absorb radiation. But if they are overheating, they will close their wings tightly together to reduce their surface area, or they'll angle them so they just slice right through the sun's rays rather than absorbing them.
So they are constantly adjusting their own satellite dishes to control their heat intake.
Exactly.
Now, this all makes perfect sense in the wild, where animals have adapted to their specific environments over millions of years. But reading through the Discovery Rangers report, here's where it gets really interesting. They dedicate a whole section to what happens when wild animals were in a zoo.
Right, a totally different environment.
When a major heat wave strikes a city, you can't just put a giant panda in front of a window air conditioning unit.
No, and zookeepers have a massive responsibility to manage this. The animals are out of their natural habitats, they don't have infinite space to seek deep burrows, and they rely entirely on humans to help them thermoregulate during these extreme weather spikes.
The report gives a bunch of examples of how zoos do this across the globe, and one common theme is hiding food inside giant blocks of ice.
Yes, very common.
When I first read this, my skeptical brain wondered, Why do they hide the food in ice? Is this just a gimmick to look cute for the visitors? Or like to slow the animals down so they don't eat too fast? Is there an actual scientific reason they make the animals work for their treats instead of just giving them a chilled bowl of fruit?
That is a really crucial question, and it comes down to a practice called enrichment.
Enrichment, okay.
If you just hand an intelligent animal a cold bowl of food, they will eat it in 3 minutes and then have absolutely nothing to do for the rest of the day. In the wild, animals spend the vast majority of their waking hours foraging, hunting, sniffing out food, and just solving the puzzle of how to survive.
So if they don't have that puzzle to solve, they get bored.
They get severely bored, which can lead to stress and negative behaviors. Enrichment activities are designed to stimulate their brains and mimic the effort they would expend in the wild.
I get it.
Freezing the food forces them to work for it, keeping them mentally sharp and physically active while simultaneously providing a cooling effect.
So we are marrying psychology with thermoregulation. Let's look at the example of Whipsnade Zoo in the UK. The report says they freeze food inside massive, heavy blocks of ice. The animals literally have to claw, scratch, and dig through the ice to get the treats.
Exactly. The animals getting a full physical workout. They are flexing their muscles, using their claws, and engaging their hunting instincts.
But isn't working out making them hotter?
You'd think so. But because they are doing this intense physical labor against a freezing cold block of ice, their core temperature stays perfectly regulated. The ice pulls the heat out of their paws and mouths as they work.
That is brilliant. It's an internal distraction from the heat and a physical cooling mechanism all at once. The Smithsonian's National Zoo does something similar. They give their swamp monkeys blueberry yogurt popsicles.
Which sounds delicious, honestly.
Right. And they hide food in deep buckets of ice for their Red River hogs, so the hogs have to root around with their snouts and trotters. Their most sensitive skin stays submerged in the cold while they forage.
And you see this adapted for different species' natural behaviors everywhere. At the Houston Zoo, they don't use ice blocks for the sea lions. Instead, they set up splash zones and toss in frozen fish popsicles.
Okay, let me guess. Because sea lions are aquatic hunters, the splashing water and the floating ice engages their instinct to chase prey.
You've got it. They get to dive, swim, and chase the icy treats. It mentally simulates a hunt in the wild ocean, while the cold water and the frozen fish literally drop their body temperature.
And for the herbivores, it's a bit more relaxed, but just as effective. The San Antonio Zoo gives their hippos massive frozen fruit pops.
Oh yeah, those are huge.
They just chew on this giant block of ice, and as it melts, the cold water runs down their skin. And the Madrid Zoo even gives their giant pandas watermelon ice cream.
Which is a great example of cooling from the inside out. When the panda ingests the icy watermelon, it lowers their internal core temperature. It's actually similar to how the vulture cools its blood, but starting from the digestive tract instead.
They are turning survival science into a psychological game. It's amazing. So what does this all mean for you, our listener? When you're out in the backyard or at the park playing tag on a boiling hot day, how can you take this animal science and become a human heat hero?
Well, the beauty of it is that humans and animals share the exact same toolkit.
We do.
Absolutely. Whether you have fur, scales, or skin, staying safe in the heat comes down to three fundamental rules: utilizing shade, optimizing water, and managing your behavior.
Let's unpack the shade aspect first. It sounds obvious, you know, just stand under a tree, but the report outlines an awesome shade versus sun experiment to prove the physics of it.
Oh, this is a great one to try at home.
You take two thermometers, you put one on the grass in the direct blinding sun, and you put the other on the grass under the thick shade of a tree. Leave them for 10 minutes and check the difference.
The hard numbers behind that experiment are always shocking to people. Simply moving out of the direct sunlight and into the shade can lower the ambient temperature around your body by 10 to 15 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wow.
That is roughly a 5 to 8 degrees Celsius drop just by taking two steps to the left.
Because the tree is acting like the elephant's mud bath, it is physically intercepting the solar radiation before it can hit you.
Exactly. But you have to consider what is beneath your feet, too. The report stresses being very aware of ground temperatures.
Right, because standing in the shade on a nice grassy lawn feels very different than standing in the shade in an empty parking lot. Why is the ground such a massive factor?
It comes back to radiative heat. Dark, dense, man-made surfaces, like asphalt driveways, blacktop playgrounds, or concrete sidewalks, they're basically heat sinks. They absorb the sun's radiation all day long, holding on to that thermal energy.
Like the dark cloth in the ear radiator test.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And because they hold that energy, they radiate it back up at you. An asphalt driveway can actually be 50 to 90 degrees Fahrenheit hotter than the air temperature around it.
Wait, 90 degrees hotter than the air? So if it's 95 degrees outside, the blacktop could literally be 150 degrees or more.
Easily. Which is why you should never walk barefoot on a driveway in July, and why playing on grass is infinitely safer. Grass breathes, it holds moisture, and it doesn't absorb and radiate heat the way concrete does.
Okay, so rule one is seek shade and avoid the asphalt radiator. Rule two is water, specifically hydration. The family checklist in the report recommends kids drink 4 to 8 ounces of water every single hour when they are active in the heat. But there's a crucial caveat here. You have to drink before you actually feel thirsty.
That is a vital point.
Yeah.
The sensation of thirst is a delayed biological alarm.
Really?
Yeah. By the time your brain sends you the signal that your mouth is dry and you need water, your body is already in the early stages of dehydration. Your evaporative cooling system, your sweat, is already running low on fuel.
But I love this next tip, because sometimes chugging endless glasses of water gets super boring. You can actually eat your water.
Yes. Water-rich foods are a fantastic light hack for staying hydrated. We mentioned the pandas eating watermelon. Watermelon is 92% water.
That's mostly just tasty water.
Exactly. And cucumbers are a staggering 96% water.
So eating a bowl of cold cucumber slices is scientifically almost identical to drinking a glass of water. Plus, you get vitamins and electrolytes.
Exactly. It hydrates you from the inside out, providing the liquid your body needs to maintain that evaporative sweat cycle we talked about.
Which brings us to clothing. The checklist insists on light, loose, and breathable fabrics. Now, if I'm sweating, my instinct is to wipe it off so I don't feel sticky. But if we go back to our physics lesson, we want the sweat on our skin, right? We just need it to evaporate.
Precisely. This is why breathable fabrics are non-negotiable. If you wear heavy, tight clothing, you are trapping the air against your body.
Like a greenhouse.
Right. Your body pushes sweat out onto your skin to cool you down, but because the heavy fabric blocks the airflow, the water molecules can't escape. They can't evaporate.
They just sit there getting hotter, and your body keeps sweating to try and fix the problem, which just dehydrates you faster.
Yes. Breathable fabric allows the outside breeze to easily pass through the material, sweep over your skin, pick up those water molecules, and carry the heat away. It facilitates the evaporative cooling.
That makes perfect sense.
And pairing that with a wide-brimmed hat creates a personal portable shade structure for your head and neck.
And your neck is packed with blood vessels. So by keeping the sun off your neck, you are cooling the blood before it goes to your brain, just like the jackrabbit cooling its ears.
It is the exact same biological strategy.
Okay, finally, rule three, smart behavior. The report calls this timing activities, and it requires checking something called the heat index. Now, why isn't checking the regular temperature enough?
Because the regular temperature doesn't account for humidity, which is the amount of moisture already hanging in the air. The heat index combines the actual temperature with the humidity to tell you how hot it physically feels to the human body.
Oh, because if the air is already saturated with water, our sweat can't evaporate into it. The air is basically full.
Exactly. High humidity breaks our evaporative cooling system. If the heat index reads over 90 degrees Fahrenheit, or about 32 degrees Celsius, the report strongly advises limiting intense outdoor play.
So, you have to act like a wild animal. You shift your behavior. The sun's rays are at their absolute most brutal between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. If you want to play tag or ride bikes, you do it early in the morning before 10 a.m., or you wait until the late evening after 5 p.m. to avoid the strongest rays.
And when you do go outside, you bring the cool zones with you. Carry a little misting spray bottle, spritz your arms and face while you run around. You are essentially building a portable Sitatunga misting station for yourself.
Or run through the yard sprinkler. And if your house doesn't have air conditioning, use the modern equivalent of a frog's cool mud burrow.
The library?
Exactly. Head to a community cooling center, like a local public library, and read a book in the AC during those peak afternoon hours.
Because ultimately, keeping cool is not just about avoiding feeling sticky. Overheating can quickly escalate into heat exhaustion or heat stroke, which are very serious medical emergencies. By proactively using shade, hydrating properly, and timing your activities, you are actively protecting your health.
So, whether you are a vulture with bare legs, a honeybee fanning a hive, a giant panda eating watermelon, or a kid on summer vacation, the toolkit is exactly the same. We all rely on the physics of water, the protection of shade, and the intelligence to change our behavior when the sun gets too intense.
It's all connected. Diving into all this raises a really provocative thought, one that the report briefly touches on regarding the future.
Oh, about climate change.
Yeah. Scientists are studying how animals stay cool right now to better protect wildlife in the face of global climate change.
Because the baseline temperatures of the Earth are rising.
Yes. And we have to wonder, if our world keeps getting steadily harder, how will these animal behaviors adapt long term? Think about estivation, that deep summer sleep the frogs do.
Right.
Will estivation become a necessary, completely normal survival tactic for a much wider variety of species?
Wow. Will animals that are currently awake during the day slowly evolve to become entirely nocturnal? Will the whole food chain just shift into the dark just to avoid the daytime heat?
It is a massive question. The natural world is incredibly resilient and evolution is always working, but the environment is definitely putting these systems to the ultimate test right now. It makes you wonder what hidden behavioral superpowers animals might unlock next just to survive.
It really does. So the next time you step outside on a blazing summer afternoon and you get that heavy, drained, cranky feeling, take a moment, grab a misting bottle, find a leafy tree, maybe eat a few cucumber slices, and remember the animals. Stay curious, stay cool, and go be a summer heat hero.
Thanks for listening, Discovery Rangers. If you enjoyed this, please ask Mum or Dad to play another episode for you.